WGN Radio, John Williams here. Tom Gimbel's the job expert and founder of LaSalle Network. Tom, I hope you're doing well.
I'm doing great, John. How are you?
I'm really good. I'm broadcasting from Minneapolis today. I'm in a little studio at the station I used to work at. I was up here for their 100-year gala last night, so I'm broadcasting from a different studio today.
Well, I guess you're doing remote work, huh?
Yeah. Oh, what a nice segue, because but I do want to tell you, and you've probably seen this reported nationally anyway, the 3M, which is a big Minnesota mining and manufacturing company, it's 3M, is telling its workers to come back. I'm just reading from the Minneapolis Star Tribune. 3M is telling its workers to come back to the office 3 days a week. 3M is calling back employees after adhering to a fully remote-friendly policy far longer than many other companies. Starting next month, senior leaders will be required to work on-site at 3M headquarters in the suburb of Maplewood Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Thursdays. So you caught that. Senior leaders in the office Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. Other employees are encouraged but not required to come to the office for what they're calling collaboration days. What's your thought about all of that?
Well, first, I wonder if they put it on a sticky and put it on their computer.
Nice.
3M.
Nice. Nice.
Thank you. I think it's great. I think this is where we've been talking about for a long time. And if you notice, they said senior leaders, as you emphasized. So they're starting at the top, and they're not doing it for all the rank and file. And they're saying, you're going to do as you see, right? Not just as you're told. And we're going to have senior leaders do that, which I think is a great message to send for a company that's as big as 3M. I mean, you're talking about a Fortune 500 company. And remember, they're in the manufacturing and distribution business. So they're truck drivers, they're warehouse people, they're manufacturers. These people have been doing the blue collar work nonstop since COVID. So this is now white collar stepping up and doing what everybody else has been doing. I think it's where things have been going. It's what we've been talking about for a long time, John. And Amazon was the first step after Wall Street, and you're going to keep seeing it again and again and again.
I'm surprised the senior managers weren't already in the office. I mean, it seems like upper level, the C-suites and maybe below there, have long been saying we want everybody back in the office, but this sort of tells me that they weren't in the office either.
Well, I think that's a big challenge. And it really surprises me to this day that more CEOs of Fortune 1000 companies were not mandating that their executive teams and their management teams come into the office. And what has happened, obviously there's no documentation on it, but the only takeaway you can have is that they hoped that people would voluntarily do it, and you just weren't seeing that happen. And that if you were going to give them enough rope, people were figuratively going to hang themselves. And some people have. And now what you've got is everybody's going to come in. And the real thing, John, that I bet you'll see come January of 25 is more and more companies say it's not 3 days a week, it's four. And some of them saying it's going to be five.
All of this presumes, though, that this will be better for the company, right?
Oh, I think it's on a variety of levels. I think, number one, there's the financial results. There's no doubt about that. But it's really a way, what you're going to see with the unemployment numbers the way they are and with the society the way it is and the cultural challenges that we face, is a lot of companies are going to use return to office as a way to let people go. You're going to have people that don't want to come into the office, and
well,
they're going to let them go. It's going to be a way to cleanse the system.
Wow. Okay, I hadn't anticipated that, but I see that. I wanted to read you, though, something else that 3M said about why they're doing this. The CEO, Bill Brown, wrote a note to employees. We're talking to Tom Gimbel, the job expert. He was the founder, of course, of LaSalle Network, and the job expert's been talking to us about this story in the Minneapolis Star Tribune I was reading today about how 3M is actually asking its senior leaders to come back, and everybody else can volunteer to come back for what they're calling collaboration days. Here's another quote, Tom, from Bill Brown, the CEO. We have heard from employees with strong points of view in support of remote work, as well as others who miss the innovation, creativity, and working relationships that we believe happen best in person. To get the best of both, we are evolving. So top managers in Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursdays. Other employees, they're encouraging them to come in for collaboration days. It sounds like they're a little late to the game, but you think before too long, it's going to be everybody at work 4 days a week, right?
Yeah, that's what I think. And volunteering, there's a phrase in corporate America sometimes called voluntold. I think that's probably more appropriate here. And I really think that if people can't see the writing on the wall, they're fooling themselves. And I'd also say, I don't think this is an evolution. I think we're going to quote a little Christopher Lloyd from a Bob Zemeckis film from the 80s, John. We're going back to the future.
I mean, go ahead, Tom. Keep talking, Tom. Go ahead.
We had a 3.5-year hiatus because of something that the world had never seen. And yeah, there's some great technology with Zoom and Teams and some other stuff. But at the end of the day, people are people, and society is not in a great place due to social media, amongst other things. And companies pay the bills. I mean, we can tap dance around this all we want, but at the end of the day, you get a job, companies pay you. If you don't like it, go find someplace else. There'll always be some outliers that'll let you work remotely, but the majority of companies are going to have you in an office.
Before the break, you suggested this is also just an easy way for the company to sort of trim the herd, and I understand that, but they're also going to lose some good employees in the process. I know plenty of people who are more productive and are happier at home than at work, and if those people just throw up their hands and say, fine, I'll retire early or whatever their options are, the company must know they're going to lose some good people, or they're going to take some people who are productive and happy, and you're going to make them less productive and less happy.
You know what? You can't listen to the, you know, what do they say about football coaches? If you listen to the fans in the crowd, you'll become one.
These are the players. These are the players. These are the people on the field telling you.
But it's at the end of the day, you have a company. I imagine 3M probably has, you know, 20, 30, 40, 50,000 employees, okay, in offices around the country in addition to Minneapolis. And at the end of the day, there's always going to be people who complain. John, a quick anecdote. I remember reading this book when I started my company 26 years ago, and it said, you could fire Charles Manson, and somebody's going to say, why'd they fire good old Charlie? Okay. At the end of the day, there's always going to be a naysayer who says something isn't right. This isn't what I want. And there's always going to be people who say, I'm more productive working from home. Okay, go find a place to do that. We're going to find other talent that wants to come in, and we're going to evolve and change and grow, and we're going to do what we believe is right. And if you want to go do that, either A, start your own. And listen, from every mistake that leadership makes, another startup company is born. Good for them. God bless them. Go do it. But let's stop complaining and follow the rules. Sometimes rules are a good thing. We've got this thing in society that's happened over the past 4 years that we think we don't have to follow, and we can make them up. Guess what? The person who writes the check makes the rules, whether it's the person who's hiring the babysitter, the landscaper, the painter, or the CEO of 3M. Let's get on the bus.
I can't argue with all of that, but I still think you're ignoring the point that I just want you to acknowledge that in culling the herd, you're going to lose some people who are working hard for you and were productive and will be less efficient and less happy.
Absolutely. There's no doubt about it. You will lose a few people who are very much like that. But we can't be mistaken to think that risk assessment hasn't already been done by leadership.
Yeah, right. Okay, fair enough, right. And so they know that. They're going to lose some good people with the bad, but it's, like you said, it's their money, it's their company, right?
The positive outcome outweighs the potential downfall of losing a few good people. They think that's a risk analysis, and the positive outcomes of doing this will far outweigh the good people that you lose.
That's an interesting point. By the way, one other thing, Tom, and it's not why we called you today, but before you came on, we were talking about the minimum wage and the fact that Donald Trump was trolling Kamala Harris by going to a McDonald's and saying she never worked there. There's no evidence that she did or didn't, because who keeps receipts or pay stubs from 45 years ago, and McDonald's doesn't have one either. Let's assume she's telling the truth about that small point, but he was trying to upset her apple cart. And the question became, when Trump was doing that, hey, what are we going to do about the federal minimum wage? And he was less interested in answering that question than he was just saying, I think Kamala Harris isn't telling you the truth. But we're hearing from a lot of people who, when I asked, tell me how much you earn, does anybody really make $7.75 an hour? And I'm getting a lot of texts from people who are saying things like, yeah, $7.75 an hour, $8.25 an hour. My daughter works as a receptionist for a real $8.25 an hour. John, $7.75 an hour is a reality for me and many people I know. I don't know if you had a reaction to that or not.
I think that the municipalities and the states have, for most places, minimum wage is higher than that. But yeah, there is a federal minimum. And I think at the end of the day, the system does ferret out that those companies that are the lowest payers don't always have the best people and the best solutions. Should there be a higher federal minimum wage? Yes. Should it be Bernie Sanders, $17 an hour? No. And I think that that's part of what we elect our local, our Congress people to do, is in do that. It's not necessarily a presidential act. And I'm a never Trumper. So just before anybody comes on you and sends hate texts to me and you, John, I'm a never Trumper. However, I think the fact of saying that this is an executive decision and not a congressional decision is crazy. Yeah. And it's about time we take some pride in our congressmen and who we vote for, congresspeople. And we've realized that all politics are local, and we vote there.
We're out of time. We'll just read one last text. John, Tom is correct. If you want to make the rules, start your own company or find someone else to work for. And then it says Tom for King. Wow, Tom, that's the position I've been vying for. I got some competition now from Tom Gimbel, the job expert and founder of LaSalle Network. Thank you, sir.
Can I change my Twitter handle to @KingTom like you?
No. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, WGN Radio, with another guest from BusinessInsider.com. We reach out to them frequently. Emily Stewart is here today, the senior correspondent, with an article, Millennials and Gen X Are Figuring Out What to Do with Boomers' Stuff. Emily, I could have written this article, but I'm glad you did.
Yeah, I feel like this is one where I have found myself, every time I bring it up, I hear a personal story. So I think a lot of people are in this position, and myself included.
And I'm the sandwich generation, so my parents are still alive. They've still got some stuff. But I've got kids and grandkids, very young grandkids, and then 30-year-old kids. And so I've got a coming and going. And so where Brenda and I, for instance, know full well that when my mom and dad pass someday, and we're not sure they ever will, that there will be just a few items that we want. You know, we love them, and it's been a great run, but we don't need another dining room table, and we don't need Hummels. And my kid, but we think our stuff is awesome. But I'm sure my kids feel the way about my stuff that maybe a lot of my generation feels about our parents' stuff, and that's the tangle we're in, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's something called like the endowment effect, right? Where kind of we think that the things that we own have more value than they do. But yeah, I mean, this is very much a generational problem, right? Everybody's parents have stuff. They love that stuff. That stuff means something to them. They went on a vacation. They saved up for it. And then it comes time to maybe they're downsizing. They're moving to an assisted living. They pass. And everybody kind of thinks, well, that stuff will all get passed down. And no, your kids want their own stuff. They have their own taste. You think of the baby boomers, you mentioned, they have the Hummels, they have the wedding china, they have the big brown furniture, the Hutches. Their kids don't want those things. I talked to somebody recently for this story. She said she spent thousands of dollars on her wedding china in 1978, took it to a yard sale, someone put an $80 price tag on it, and nobody would buy it. So.
Full set, like probably 8 or 10 or 12 settings?
Yeah, a full set of wedding china. And, you know, I look around my mom's house, and she took stuff from my dad's side of the family that I think, you know, she wanted the china, some of it's out of guilt. And, you know, she says to me, oh, this will be yours someday. And in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, well, I don't want this stuff. I live in New York City.
Please, no. Here, you get rid of this someday, some generation. I wonder if this is not necessarily a cautionary tale, but okay, so for those of us who are still accumulating things, don't accumulate things for your kids or grandkids, and be a little more select about what you accumulate. Like, if you're not going to use china, don't get china. Don't ask for it when you get married. I wonder how many wedding couples these days accumulate china.
Yeah, I mean, you have to think a lot of people aren't asking for china anymore. And I do think, too, you know, one thing that came through is if you do have china, stop saving it for a special occasion. Use it.
Right.
That you have it for 50 years, you've used it twice. Who cares? Get it out. You may as well. And I think that's something, too, where it's enjoy the things that you have is kind of like a nice reminder as well, that there's no reason to keep that silver hidden away for the special occasion that never comes around.
Did you talk to liquidators or antiquers or junkers for your story?
Yeah, I talked to some antique people, some downsizers, some estate sellers. And, you know, from them, I think, you know, got a couple of takeaways. You know, one was definitely if this is, you know, time comes for everyone, and I think families want to start thinking about this kind of stuff sooner rather than later. You'd much rather be going through your parents' home or your own home when you are feeling good, when you have a lot of time and energy, versus when there's an illness or you really need to get out quickly, because this is a long process. You know, one person told me this isn't something you fly in on Friday night with a dumpster and you're out the door Sunday. You know, I think it's also kind of important to remember some of this stuff is kind of hard to get rid of, and sometimes you do want professional help. I didn't realize until I reported for this that sometimes Goodwill doesn't take furniture anymore. So it's not even like you can get rid of this stuff if you want to, unless you're going to throw it in the trash. And, you know, a lot of people also said, you know, sometimes they are kind of breaking some hearts, right? Where somebody's mom kept this, you know, this tea set for years and years thinking, oh, this is going to be worth money someday for my kids. And everybody's pretty disappointed to realize it's not worth a lot of money. But just because something doesn't have a lot of financial value doesn't mean it doesn't have sentimental value. Mm-hmm. And, you know, a lot of people also said, too, if you are cleaning out, you know, start small. You start with a kitchen drawer where it's stuff that you don't really care about. So that way, by the time you get to the big stuff, it's not as hard of a decision to make about, or at least your decision muscle is flexed a little bit more.
You also did the math a little bit on storage units, because that's a place where a lot of our stuff goes to die. Talk about that.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of put in a, you know, a hypothetical here, but, you know, let's say that your dad thinks, well, I'm downsizing to a condo or whatever, but I don't want to sell my stuff. I'll put it in storage for my kids someday. And let's say 10 years later, dad dies. He's been paying $150 a month for a decade for storage. And suddenly everybody realizes he spent, you know, almost $20,000 on housing items nobody wants. One thing that I really did hear loud and clear from the downsizers, from the experts, from the antiquers, is genuinely do not get a storage space, which is a thing that, you know, I've kind of thought about, and I was like, oh, I probably shouldn't do that. Because it is a thing where, like, you know, candidly, if you don't want it now, you're probably not going to want it in 10 years. And that's hard. And, you know, that's tricky. And, you know, I also heard from a lot of people, which I thought was quite funny, which is sometimes, you know, if your parents want to get rid of things, they kind of just don't want to deal with it, and it depends on the relationship. But if you go over to your mom's house and she says, here's this silver platter, she might never ask what happened to that silver platter. Unless you have it, you can get rid of it.
Oh, wow. Unless she comes over one day and goes, let's have tea and cookies and let's use the good silver platter. And you're like, wah, wah. But
yep.
The quote in the article, maybe, just back to storage units for a minute, because I think your math on that is really illustrative of the problem, that you say, well, I'll just get a storage locker. And the quote was, never get a storage unit. It's a cuss word. But I do think that storage units are another way to think about them. And this is why you could maybe justify it, is that just think of it as extra square footage you're paying rent on. If your rent or condo is $2,000 a month and you got 800 square feet, now you have 860 square feet, and you're paying an extra $150 a month. I mean, it's rental space that you don't use. And if the storage unit is full of seasonal things that you will use,
right,
then that's, you know, don't beat yourself up because you've got a condo or a small apartment. But if you've got China in there that you don't want to think about, here's how to get a raise. Clear that thing out.
Right, exactly. I think there's a difference between I'm putting my ski equipment in there and I'm putting in this big brown hutch that I don't want, that my kids don't want, that no one wants. And again, suddenly we've spent $1,000 on this item that we know nobody wants. And so I've thought about this in my own life with, you know, my mother. And I think for a while in the back of my head, there was a plan of, well, you know, if and when she passes or when she, you know, downsizes, I will just put that stuff in a storage unit. And then at some point, especially reporting this, I thought, well, for what? Like, there's not a world where suddenly this giant, my mom has some weird kind of old, scary looking dolls. There's no reason for me to pay money to house the dolls that I know I do not want.
You know, you don't, the last just observation I have, it's a very interesting article, and it's just, I think everybody can relate to this. At businessinsider.com, millennials and Gen X are figuring out what to do with boomer stuff. You don't want to be seen as preying on them. You don't want to be saying, hey, mom, how about we start to liquidate your assets while we're having a sandwich? Because mom is still here, and it just seems a little predatory. And so I guess the trick is to manage that without seeming to be that way, right, Emily?
Yeah, I think it can be really emotional because, again, you know, as you say, it could seem predatory or just kind of cold to say to someone, well, you know, what are you going to do with all this stuff that you have? But at the same time, I do think, you know, there might be an opportunity to bond a little bit with your parents, right? And say, hey, like, ask, you know, what is this? Why is this important to you? Because that will also maybe help you figure out what you do want to hold on to and what you don't. And for them also, it can be nice to kind of share those stories. And that can also help with the process of maybe deciding that spoon that they got on vacation 30 years ago actually can go somewhere else now that they've told you the story of how they got it.
The vacation spoon. I wish you hadn't said that because we bought a spoon on vacation. And that's going to be worth something someday, Emily. You watch. It's nice to talk to Emily Stewart from businessinsider.com. Get that article, share it with your siblings. Emily, nice to talk to you today.
Yep, you too. Thanks.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch on WGN. More business news with Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. Consolidation of branches is underway at Huntington Bank. Cranes report 6 Huntington branches are being shut down in the Chicago area, including 2 in Chicago, 1 in Arlington Heights, 1 in Oak Lawn, and 1 in Lombard. The bank says it's consolidating operations of branches with locations less than 3 miles away. Huntington Bank purchased TCF Bank in 2021. It has about $10 billion in deposits in the Chicago area. The branch closings will happen in January. Snack food company Mondelez International, based in Chicago, is selling its stake in the coffee brand JDE Peet's. Investment firm JAB will acquire the coffee maker for $2.3 billion. JAB manages money for the billionaire Ryman family, and the transaction will allow the firm to increase its control over JDE Peet's as the company shares trade near all-time lows. JAB's stake in the company will rise to 68% after the acquisition. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
And while it's just top of mind, let me pass along this observation from a listener who said, here's the quote to live by. Will anyone be happier if I save this? The idea is that we should not leave a mountain of crap behind for our loved ones to clean up afterwards. And the question is not will they be sad, but will anybody be happier if I save this? And if it doesn't make anybody happier, then why are you saving it? Okay, good way to think about that. Now let's think about the business of food and Steve Alexander.
Yeah, thank you. And let's see who's on the phone.
Sarah Fry, founder and CEO of Fry Farms.
Hi, Sarah. And you have another title too, don't you?
I do. Many years ago, the New York Times coined me the Pumpkin Queen of America.
More about Her Royal Highness after I thank the Chevy Silverado for sponsoring us today. There's never been a better time to put a Silverado in your toolbox. Find out how at ChevyDriveChicago.com. Okay, the queen of pumpkins, Sarah Fry. She was the youngest of 21 children in a blended family, the last one on the 80-acre family farm near Orchardville in southern Illinois. At the age of 15, she started her own fresh produce delivery business. Today, Fry Farms has more than 15,000 acres across 7 states.
Yeah, Fry Farms is best known as the nation's largest grower of fresh pumpkins, but we actually grow more watermelons than we do pumpkins.
One day, about 30 years ago, Sarah was driving her pickup truck and trailer and delivering pumpkins to grocery stores and noticed a Walmart distribution center was being built near Olney.
And I thought to myself, wow, it would be so much easier for me. I wonder if they'll be taking produce.
So she stopped in and by chance met a woman who would be in charge of produce buying for the region.
She asked me if I could deliver truckloads of produce, things that I was already selling to their stores. And I said, absolutely. And I shook her hand and I walked out of the DC that day. I was a teenage kid and I thought, this is great.
Except
she wasn't talking about my pickup truck and my trailer. She was talking about semis. And I thought, oh my gosh, I don't know how to drive a semi.
She learned, though, and four of Sarah's older brothers came back to the farm to help her meet the new demand. The business grew, and Walmart remains a major buyer.
And that is really sort of how they developed many of their fresh produce suppliers with farmers and growers in the communities in which they serve.
Sarah Fry, the queen of pumpkins, who would like us to be like the rest of the world and enjoy pumpkins year-round.
Eating pumpkin in Australia is just as common as eating potatoes in America.
On the food calendar, it's National Tavern Style Pizza Day, and
sometimes you feel like a nut.
It's National Nut Day. I'm Steve Alexander. That's the business of food on 720 WGN.
What was the number I saw? Over $3 billion, almost $4 billion on Halloween this year. 37% of us say it is our favorite holiday of the year. Cortland Hickey is the general manager at Chicago Costumes. So, Cortland, I suppose you're kind of busy these days.
Yeah, John, we're definitely busy.
And is it busier this year than maybe last year, the year before? Is the pandemic completely in the rearview mirror?
So, you know, actually, we're a little behind last year, and last year was a little bit behind 2022. But, you know, we're always pretty busy. We do lots of different things. So if we're not busy in the shop, we're shipping orders online. If we're not doing orders online, we're doing school plays and shows and things like that here in the fall.
I was just going to say, you're not just Halloween stuff. You're year-round, right?
That's right. We're Chicago's only full-service costume shop, so you know we have all kinds of different things happening all the time.
Two locations, Lincoln Park and Portage Park. You're on West Fullerton and West Montrose Avenue. Is Chicago a good town for your trade?
Well, you know, it's a great place to live and get dressed up. You know, here in the city, we don't have as many houses to decorate, but folks in the suburbs definitely, you know, love to decorate their lawns. Here, there's a lot more apartment living, but there's a lot of young people who go out and definitely go all out to party as far as their costumes and their makeup and wigs and things like that. So that's where our specialty.
And the top costumes this year probably fall in line with, well, you tell us, what are people looking to dress up as?
Well, there's definitely a big resurgence in Beetlejuice, yeah. All the characters from the new movie, Wolverine and Deadpool, huge for kids, a lot of anime stuff. Just, you know, all around horror in general has definitely got a resurgence. People are into Freddy Krueger, Michael Myers, Friday the 13th, all of those.
I saw on your list for kids, Bluey. I hope I get a Bluey at my house. My son has a couple little kids, and he insists that Bluey is the best TV show ever made.
My kids agree, and I couldn't agree more. It's a really great program, and we have all the characters for adults and for children. So there's a lot of great costumes to dress up. Very comfortable costume, too.
Do politics or sports pop up in your costumes?
Well, it is an election year, so we do have all of the candidates. We have the Kamala masks. We have Trump masks. We have all the other candidates who previously been. Actually, we've had a big resurgence in Nixon and Reagan
an Obama mask this year. So I don't know if that's just for posterity or what. But, you know, it being an election year, there's definitely people getting dressed up and getting the masks and making fun of the candidates. So
yeah, right. And I guess if you were going to get, a Kamala or a Donald Trump mask, then you would probably bring your own prop to signal however you feel about the candidate, right? But at least you've got the mask. Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely. A lot of people use them for displays, too, in their house or their party. So there's a lot of sort of satire, especially in the Instagram era. So people are definitely big into using that for all the fun stuff.
Okay. If I want to check your stuff out, you've got an online presence, Courtland. What do I do?
Absolutely. ChicagoCostume.com. You can also check us out on Instagram, Chicago Costume, and Facebook as well. So we're all over the place, and we're open late this week, and we have a huge selection online, in-store, both locations, and we have a really great staff who's waiting here to help you out and find your great costume. You know, it's not like shopping at Target or Walmart. We're here to help you figure it out.
Yeah, I can attest to that. They've helped me before. Chicago Costume General Manager Courtland Hickey. Have a great season, Courtland.
Thank you very much, John.